Koto, welcome to this talk about Wild Wildlife, a public art project commissioned by Auckland Council and presented by the Auckland Arts Festival here in Tamaki Makaurau. My name is Mark Williams. I'm the curator of Wild Wildlife. By day, I'm the director of Circuit Artists Moving Image, which is an organisation that represents about 200 New Zealand artists working in film and video. So Wild Wildlife, what is it about? Visiting the city, it seemed to me the dominant motif was the remaking of the inner city through this massive project of infrastructure. And what intrigued me was kind of the contrast with the lives of a lot of the artists working in the inner city that I know. And I wondered what their role might be in the future post this remaking of the inner city. Another influence on this project was a book by Richard Mabey called The Unofficial Countryside, written in the 1970s, which talked about how in the aftermath of urban renewal, there was a lot of kind of waste, which actually formed quite safe havens for flora and fauna. So we put out a call for proposals that addressed Auckland City and its discrete spaces, discrete networks, discrete communities, and spaces that were off-grid, off-map. And we accepted 7 proposals, and they're now all installed throughout the CBD and play every Friday on the big screen out there in Aotea Square. So today what we're going to do is we're going to speak to all of the artists about the inspiration for their project. There's a lot of artists here today, and we've only got an hour, so we'll do our very best. But first of all, I wanted to begin by introducing all the artists. Laila Falisuka, Jay Hoon Lee, Gabriel White, Gavin Hipkins, Lane Wairea. So Lane, your work explores tensions between the legal and the everyday. You have a background in the law and also the arts as well. Your work for Wild Wildlife is called Bonus Play. Could you tell us a little bit about the concept behind the project and how it operates at the intersection of those two things?
Kia ora Mark, kia ora koutou. Bonus Play involved myself and 4 other artists, Jo Jowett, Ziggy Lever, Deborah Rundle and Charlie Stringer. And we were interested in looking at the rules that sort of govern how the built-up environment in the CBD era, how it operates, and in particular, the bonus floor scheme allowed for private developers, so private owners of land, to build beyond their consent, and as a trade-off for that, or compensation for the perhaps a lack of sunlight or diminished flora, then they had to provide some kind of public benefit, and usually in the way of a public access way. And escalators are a good example, alleyways through buildings, widened street paths as well, and also privately owned artwork that is made public as a result of this scheme. So we were interested in playing in these spaces and testing, I guess, a playful critique on the nature of these spaces. Where are they? Who looks after them? And, you know, does the public actually know of these places that are for their benefit? So, yeah, that was the basis around our project. And most of the people involved had already been part of an earlier project about, I'd say, 10 years ago, where we were looking at it. So this was probably the first time to put it to film.
And it seems like a project that's really well suited to an ensemble cast as well. You have all these different people intervening in the city in different ways, and you can sort of tell that they're all actually very at home in the city and very comfortable with those spaces as well. So was it a deliberate choice? I mean, I'm fairly familiar with most of your videos where you work alone. Was it a deliberate choice for this project to work with an ensemble?
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I think it did have its sort of genesis in an earlier iteration. And at that stage, the 4 of us are in this project, are interested in public space, are interested in behaviours in public spaces and having fun. I mean, we had a lot of fun, and I'm pleased to say we got asked to move twice the balls on the escalator. Very polite security guard who said, no, this is private land, you can't use it in this way. He was probably right, but we were quite interested in testing the limits and, you know, as to what is public access in a public space. Yeah.
Thank you, Lane. So your project dealt very much with things that are there, kind of in plain sight. I wanted to ask Laila now about your project. which deals with an archive and memory, if you like. Maybe if you could just start by talking about your family's relationship to Auckland, and then we can talk about how you managed to articulate that through the work.
Well, kia ora everyone. My name's Laila. Yeah, so when I read the brief, I was immediately taken by the idea of the discrete space. And so for me, so I live in the Hora Whenua. So my connection to Auckland, though, is through memory and through archive. So my family, I mean, I have lived here as a child, but the work is about my grandmother. And she was Samoan, and she came here in 1962. So she was part of that Pacific immigration here to the inner city. And then my father came out in 1972. So for me, when I saw the brief and realised that this was very much an Auckland-based ask, it was about my family history and my memory. And it started from being the memory of my grandmother's house that I remember, which is her house out in Mangere. But the project took me on a journey, and it actually also ended up speaking to the rich history that my grandmother, my dad, the rich history and still the steadfast presence that Pacifica have in the inner city. So part of the work that I did was using our family video archive and digitising the VHSs that I could find and looking through there to find material to work with that related to her house in Mangere. And I had a particular interest in her garden and the function of the garden for an immigrant. So for my grandmother, her garden was really important for her to retain memory for Samoa. But I found less material about her garden and more material about her house and also artifacts from her house. And my father had all her stuff. So she's passed away, but he had all of the stuff that was in her house in Mangere that I remember as a child. But a lot of that stuff, while it spoke to her South Auckland existence, a lot of it spoke to her inner city life, the really rich life that she led here in the CBD before moving out south in the late 70s.
The work has quite a lot of religious material in it as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. So obviously my grandma was a very religious woman. The Methodist Church was very important to her. And so there's a lot of artifacts that I use in the video that pertain to that, but also the soundtrack. So when I was hunting through her things, I found a vinyl from 1974 that was from the Pitt Street Methodist Church, so the Samoan choir. And she's on there, front and centre, but also two of my aunties and my granddad. So I just thought that was a really important link to the inner city, but also to the family history. And so two of the hymns off there are the soundtrack to my video. Yeah.
Thanks, Laila. Gavin, let's talk about your work. There were a lot of people who pitched the idea of a kind of travelogue of Auckland, but I think what distinguished your project from a lot of the others was that you combined these images of parks and gardens, which you had visited in your youth, with on-screen text and animated symbols. And these are quite mysterious symbols. We don't know exactly what they mean. They could be some ancient rune, an emblem of some contemporary wellness cult. It could be anything at all. So what links together these pieces of text, these animated images, and these images of Auckland parks and gardens?
Kia ora, Mark. Kia ora koutou. So the title of my work is Motion of a Current. And as Mark has described, it comprises naturalistic colour footage of gardens, public gardens, Auckland Council gardens exclusively, as well as text quotes or lines which were borrowed, having borrowed from an 1870s science essay published in Wellington describing gravitation. And I thought, stumbling across that pamphlet, I thought that those late 19th century ideas of gravitation and satellites and orbits and energy could be pertained to the brief, but also to this exploration of Tamaki Makaurau. So literally a spiralling out from the centre and thinking about those coordinates across the city that affect each other, including the eastern line and the western line, the train lines, etc. So some of these fundamentals. So borrowing their texts, citing those texts and integrating those elements was really a question of how do those text bytes in poetic form affect a landscape which is supposedly neutral, which is obviously not neutral. And as soon as we start to impose symbols, which are actually astrological symbols, some of them are easily identifiable, some of them more obscure, we start also to claim, to divide, to affect that, again, that whenua with that logo or that symbol. So I was really interested in the kind of the beauty of those spaces also being questioned in relationship to public access and ownership, as some of the other artists have touched on.
And the parks, they have particular resonance because they're places you visited in childhood, is that right?
Yeah, so the starting point was reflecting on, you know, day trips or places that we were taken to as children with family and friends. I grew up near the Manukau, so, you know, we could describe those kind of excursions to a sense of literally discovery or tohura in the city. And the opportunity to realise this work has very much been based on that rediscovery of sites going back again and again and again, but also of new passages, of new discoveries, etc.
Thanks, Gavin. And Jaehoon, in your work is called Space Tree, and you've used a drone, and you traverse over various sites in the city. We see a motorway, we see the zoo, but in the centre of the frame is an animated tree, which you described in your synopsis as an organic element that has almost, or maybe not quite, come into being. Why choose an organic element that is not yet in existence?
There's not particular reason, but I start to use space tree as a metaphor, as my project, my own entity. I came to New Zealand as a Korean immigrant since 98. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, myself came very different cultural background. Mm-hmm. And I tried to impose myself within tree as a kind of floating, sort of a nomadic, you know, sense of where you're being. So it has a continuum of my ongoing journey as a artist, also as a living being, living entity, you know, as a tied to tree.
And what about the sites that you traverse? Why include the zoo, for example?
Yeah, I actually start with the footage from the cemetery.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Hillsborough Cemetery, where adjacent to my neighbor area. And I think that's the perfect place for me to take a walk, yeah, including Kono Park. It's quite contrasting, you know. Kono Park is always, you know, have a, you know, this, you know, all the workers with the, you know, dog, reach the dog, and, you know, they... But usually cemetery is really silent. It can be public space, but I hardly see no one there, even though it's such a big open public space. So actually after the cemetery, and I chose to zoo for the second venue to take on. Yeah, so there's sense of my maybe own cicada rhythm of my ongoing sort of walk routines, daily routine. So there's no particular reason. There's especially two different zoo and cemetery has a specific link, but it's very my own personal attachment to different place at that time of my art process. Was like last December, and it's kind of, you know, project my own sense of, you know, beingness in space and specific space and time.
Fantastic.
Right.
Gabriel, I'm very interested to talk to you because, like, for 20 years, Auckland's been your subject. You've made feature films, you've made diaristic kind of travelogues where you walk amongst the city fringe or in little hidden way spaces and point the camera at something and then kind of interpret it on the voiceover, almost like you're a kind of visitor from another place. So on the one hand, you've got this long engagement with Auckland, but on the other hand, your main theme seems to be this kind of alienation from Auckland. Could you talk a little bit about that tension in your work?
Kia ora. I started to explore Auckland as a foreign city after having returned from about 4 or 5 years travelling. And during my travels, I had made video travelogues where I improvised wherever I was and found that when I was improvising, I created themes without really intending to. I did a lot of monologues improvised to camera in South Korea, and one of the themes was captivity, fish and aquariums, and it just kept on coming back and seeing nature in artificial things, like seeing bats where there was a whole lot of umbrellas in a marketplace. And so when I came back to Auckland, I saw it with the eyes of a returned Marco Polo. and that idea just kind of took quite strong root in me, and it became a kind of a practice. I didn't know about Baudelaire or anything like that, or situationism. It just sort of came naturally about that I felt this need to converse with my surroundings as if I were an alien. And for this piece, I finally managed to turn off my voice and to try to interact with the environment purely with gesture and movement. And I worked with two other people to do that, so I didn't have to hold the camera anymore. And I was free, and Kath was filming me, Kath O'Brien was filming me. And that was a wonderful conversation with the camera as well, and between us, and the unexpected that she would take as I was performing. And then we developed the work more by giving it to an editor who put sound with what we were doing. But I'd always really, really wanted to get into a more Buster Keaton-esque type of work, and I really enjoy using the city as a kind of film set for that kind of visual comedy. Yeah, so that was how this work came about.
The locations are pretty recognisable almost from any city, really. I mean, you know, the back of the factory, the bin, a poster stuck to the wall advertising something in the industrial fringe. But do these particular sites for your film Motorway Flowers mean anything in particular to you?
Yeah, they're sort of iconic in their lack of distinction. So yeah, they become kind of strange placeholders and across many works that I've made. So the same sites keep reappearing in different works and different things happen. I'm really fond of films that reuse the same location over and over again. I'm thinking of Satyajit Ray's film about the trilogy about Apu, and you keep on coming back to the same little step outside the door where it'll sit, and many things happen on that step. And so I'm attracted to the way that a place starts to have its own resonance in my own world. So you're going back to maybe a particular maunga that's in several of my works. Yeah, it's kind of become something in the work itself. It's become a kind of little character. Yeah.
Thanks, Gabriel. Oh, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Kirikiriroa, Tia Barrett. All the way from the motorway. Well, Tia, tell us about Maunga Kiki.
Aroha. Ko Tia Barrett tōku ingoa, I te tāo tōku pāpā, Waikato Tainui. Ngāti Mania Poto, Ngāti Tamainu Pō, I te tāo tōku māma Ngai Tahu. So Maunga Kiki, for me, what drew me to wanting to do a moving image on the maunga was connection and finding a hononga through my whakapapa. Most of my practice, a lot of the film work that I do is about whakapapa and finding connection through the tai ao. As Māori, we are intrinsically connected to whenua, and we see whenua more than just land or rivers. We see it as living entities. So in Taranaki, the maunga is seen as a human, has human rights. Same in Whanganui and the Uruwera. So for me, landmarks like Maunga Kiki I think it's important to pay homage to them as physical entities. And so I'm incredibly passionate and driven to work with our land as a creative force, but also partner in the creative process as well. The type of creative practices that I used, or my processes, were te tiro, whakarongo, observation, walking, being a part of the land, and consultation was a big part. So actually working with mana whenua, hapu and iwi, that also whakapapa to the maunga as well. So that was like a month and a half long process to actually get permission to be able to be there. And tikanga was another thing that drives me, to be able to film these tonga tuku iho that are important not just to me but to other people as well. And even though I may have been the only creative filmmaker making maunga keke, I don't see myself working by myself. The tupuna, the maunga is a tupuna. That was an entity that was a part of the creative process. The mana whenua and talking through consultation, their voices were a part of the film as well. And the rangahau that also went into maunga keke.
So the work, we see the mountain, but overlaid with that are some images of weaving.
Yes. So originally I wanted to focus predominantly on the shrub keke, because it doesn't grow on there anymore. And so I wanted to reimagine the life of keke back onto the maunga through moving image. But when I was talking to mana whenua, they said that if you are going to take that process, don't just call the work keke, honour the whole name, maunga keke, because it's all a part of it. So I worked with a kairaranga who specialises in muka but also keke weaving to help me understand more about the plant and the importance of it in a te ao Māori aspect and also within a weaving aspect. And so we went into a ngahere that keke grows abundantly. And for me, seeing it growing and thriving in a space where there's lots of moisture, it grows by water, trying to capture that and put it back onto maunga keke was something that was important to me. But also, what that also meant, hononga to having reimagined keke back onto the maunga, was acknowledging all the mana whenua who have occupied that maunga as well. So that weaving, there's a scene where there's obviously harvesting the keke, boiling the keke, and then having this kete woven scene on top of maunga keke was about bringing all the different people who have once lived there, but also keke once also living there as well. It's a direct homage back to a life that maunga keke used to live, and trying to find like a piece in that as well.
Your work is installed on Queen Street.
Yes.
In a big shop front.
Yeah.
Sort of at the other end of the Strand Arcade. Lane is at the Elliot Street end and you're on the Queen Street end.
Yeah.
What do you think it does to your work to show in that space?
Why I like it is my work is very, well, it's slow. There's stillness. How I described it, there's a maungarongo, there's a peace within my mahi, which was the wairua in Māori that came from maunga keke. I wanted to put it directly in the heart of Queen Street because of how chaotic that road can be. It was also very intentional that I wanted to keep the moving image slow and short because of the amount of people that just walk down that road. No one has time. No one has time to stop and look. So I wanted it to be short so people, if they saw it, if they saw a moment, if they captured a moment of it, they could at least walk away with a few seconds of understanding of what's happening, or just a few seconds of peace and a reminder of what Tāmaki Makaurau maybe used to look like.
Awesome. Kia ora te. I wanted to ask each of you to just for your thoughts on how the site where your work is being shown supports the work, complements in some way. Perhaps we could begin back with you again, Lane.
Cheers. Yes, so Bonus Play is located at the end of the Strand Arcade, the Elliot Street end. That's where it's landed. It was sort of planned for other places, but Victor were working outside one of the other sites, so it moved into sort of the last bay window within the Strand. And I think it's worked out really well, because the Strand is one of the access ways, so it's relevant in terms of the content. It's got this cute little bay window, which I think is polarized as well, so it provides just a, I think, just a little pop-out kind of, you know, you're not necessarily going to see it as where you're going towards, you'll notice it as you walk by. That's relevant as well in terms of, you know, what I'm interested in. It's not necessarily highlighted or underlined. It might just appear in the corner of your eye. So where it's landed, I've been really happy. And, you know, in terms of the size of it, it's perfect, I think. So, yeah.
Gavin,
your work is at the Edmiston Amphitheatre at the back of the Auckland Art Gallery on the edge of Albert Park. What does the site do for your work?
Well, as you know, Mark, we weren't sure where my work was going to be. And this is a moment, I think, for all of us to acknowledge the work that you've done and Terry O'Barn for locating these amazing venues around the city, which are in proximities to each other. You know, there's a beautiful spatial proximities and distances which make it both walkable and manageable. My own work, as you mentioned, is projected on the south side of Auckland Art Gallery as you come down the stairs from Albert Park. And there was something beautifully kind of circular in that relationship, because the first footage that I recorded was in Albert Park, not knowing that the video would work up and end up in proximity to it. So I love those chance elements, those chance crossover points, and so I feel very privileged to have the work there projected on that wall. What has it done to the work itself is activate the foliage, the trees, the bushes, the plants, in a way in relationship to the park. So there's this very much this kind of scenic proximity. So activation is the main takeaway for me in relationship to space, and also just handing over the a kind of, you know, filmmakers can often be very precious in relationship to how their works are seen, viewed, heard, 5.1 sound, all those sorts of colour space considerations as well. And working in different spaces asks an artist to open up to the possibilities that their work may change, and that the site will also respond to the work rather than just being imposed onto that. So the textural elements of the work are also affected by the very surface that these elements are played onto.
Thank you, Gavin. Jay Hoon, your work's in a pretty special place. Could you tell us about that site and what it does for your work?
Okay, my work is located at Albert Park, and there's the White Heritage Building, it's called Caretaker's Cottage. And I initially looking at the possibility of project my work at the park area, right? And first of all, I was looking at outside, in exterior of the, you know, open environment or environment of the mm-hmm. park first, exterior first, and then we sort of happened to be showing, ends up showing at the very private, sort of concealed, you know, atmosphere of the heritage cottage. I think in this way, work is kind of, you know, not so visible. It's kind of, you know, like a shy out of audience. And I think the cottage house function as a kind of small temple, you know, like maybe prayers, you know, booth. It has that such a scale of the living room where screen attached to. So people, any passerby, by chance, you know, at nighttime or daytime, you know, they can have this little discovery of, you know, space tree showing on the screen from the small cottage house living room. So I think there is quite a very arbitrary sense of connection, making connection with any kind of audience, walk past at that
specific time and location. Yep. So that's very challenging way of showing it, rather than taking artwork, chance to take art or taking artwork out of gallery atmosphere. Yeah.
I really like the juxtaposition of your work, which in some ways is quite sort of futuristic, with this old colonial house, which is slowly sort of becoming more antiquated next to its surroundings all around it. And there's this really odd juxtaposition of past and present, which I think is really interesting. But Leala, your work is in the Auckland Library. What do you think about this location? Is this a good place for your work to be?
Yeah, I love a library because I'm a librarian. So I thought that was very apt. And also it's sharing space with a Pacifica artist that's in residence there. So I was really happy with that. Originally, the work was going to be up at Karangahape Road, which I also thought would have been really contextually appropriate, because it was really important for me, for my work, which is about the discrete, domestic, diasporic space. It's a personal, intimate work. And, yeah, like the juxtaposition between having it publicly shown, but in particular to have it take up space in the inner CBD. So that's that story about my grandma lived her life here and that rich Pacifica history. So she lived on Crummer Road for many years, and she worked on Victoria Street, and she worshipped up at Pitt Street, and she had a really vibrant life here. So it was just really important for me for the work to take up space in the CBD again, and then to have my little project be a drop in the bucket of the wider scholarship around the Pacifica presence in the CBD. So yeah, I like the library, but I also think that K Road would have been awesome as well. Yeah.
Yes, by now you're probably getting the impression that there were a lot of first choices that were unattainable in this project, and that's the nature of public art. So the last artist we're going to be speaking to about this today is Gabriel White. Gabriel, you're at the Ellen Melville Centre. How does this location affect your work?
Yeah, I thought I'd just go back a little bit to what I was talking about with about making friends with particular places in the city. And I sort of adopt places that nobody else is interested in, and I perform in them, and that becomes, some of that material becomes this work. And so the idea of having it in a public square perhaps just highlights that idea of the sort of non-communality of a lot of space in cities. We're often not able to sort of congress in lots of areas, lots of parts of the city. So that particular place is clearly an open and public place, and so many of the places where I am performing and doing slightly anomalous things are right outside of most people's, you know, they're not frequented the way the square is. The other thing is, when we were deciding to put the work there, there was just so much human performance activity happening in the square. And the square is a place where you sit and often people watch. And the piece that we've made, Motorway Flowers, is very much about just looking at a person doing things and kind of having a conversation with the environment. And quite often when we're in cities and we're just sort of quietly sitting there eating our lunch, we're the people around us become a little bit like performers. So that's something that resonates, I think, between the work that we've made and the space that it's presented in.
Coming close to the end of today, I wondered if anybody had any questions before we wind it up for the afternoon.
Kia ora koutou. I'm Terry Urban, and I was the project manager for this project. This is an observation, really, and I'm not sure if it's because it's kind of uncanny or due to Mark's skill as a curator, but I just wanted to acknowledge the amazing connections that all seven videos make to each other, both symbolically and conceptually, and all of these videos are going to become part of Auckland Council's public art collection. So as a body of work, as a collection of videos, they have these amazing connections, both in terms of the sites that you chose, the symbolism that you're using to portray your concepts, and beautifully shot as well. Fantastic productions. So I just wanted to publicly acknowledge Mark as the curator and collectively the artists for the hard work that they put into the project and the longevity of this project as it lives on historically within the collection. So in a number of years' time, we'll be able to go back to these videos, especially as the CBD transforms, and reflect on how the city has changed and what it will be in the future. So congratulations.
Thanks, Terry. Finally, I think we should say thank you to the artists, and thank you to you for coming.